Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist, 8th of December 2018, a special report hitting a 1.5 degrees C. I assume that's the temperature rise. The byline is, it's the greatest task humanity has ever set itself. As the world's governments gather in Katowice, Poland, to discuss how we can limit global warming to 1.5 degrees, Graham Lawton sketches out what we must do and how to play and win the climate change challenge. Well, it's as if we've set ourselves that task. I suppose we have, in a certain sense. And obviously, reading it here, there's all this great hype, but of course, we now know after nothing really much happened. This is a quote, and I don't know where it's from. There's quotation marks. We have to do everything, and we have to do it immediately. Unquote. As a summary of the challenge facing humanity, these words are about as pithy as it gets. They come from Piers Forster, a professor of climate physics at the University of Leeds, UK, a lead author on the latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC. In case you missed it, it said, we're done for, almost. Okay, well, that's quite a good headline there. To give ourselves a better than even chances of avoiding 1.5 degrees Celsius global warming, the agreed threshold of irreversible, dangerous and possibly game over climate change, we must hit peak greenhouse emissions as soon as possible and then taper them down to net zero by 2050, give or take 5 years. That's doable, just. It's not impossible, says Helen de Klonik, another IPCC lead author at Radboud University in the Netherlands. Quote, we don't need any fancy new technologies, but it will require unprecedented rates of transformation, according to the IPCC report. We must break our addiction to fossil fuels, meat, flying, reckless consumption in general, and above all, confront head-in-the-sand denial that is preventing us from making challenges. We knew we had to make yonks ago, but somehow keep telling ourselves we weren't necessarily just yet. So how do we do it? Think of it as a video game with 7 levels of increasing difficulties, 7 levels we must now play simultaneously. There are many pathways in this giant multi-dimensional multiplayer game, although none is certain to lead to the outcome we want. We explore them over the following pages, but before we do, we need to go over some of the ground rules. How to play hitting 1.5 degrees C opposite. And so it gives a chart here. Okay, so they've got some ground rules over here. I don't know what the headings are here. Hitting 1.5 degrees. This is the first of a series of 4 features over the coming 2 months looking at the 1.5 degrees C climate target. Next week, why no one's climate numbers agree. Okay, well, that's going to be fascinating. Okay, so they've got a square, and half our global emissions are from this is really confusing. Okay. So, 48% of the global emissions comes from heating, buildings, and industry. And, this is really complicated graphics. 27% of that... This is really confusing articles. It says where the emissions come from. So it's 48% comes from heating, 32% from transport. Oh. Okay, so All right. So the size of the cube here, the square, is the percentage. There's no 100% here. So there's a 48%, 32%, and 20%. So it goes heat, transport, power. And the heat and transport is 48 and 32% is 80% and 20% power. So it all adds up. So you've got four squares, heat, transport and power. And of those squares, we've got tiny amounts which are due to renewable. Yeah, that's... So coming after a break, this is obviously podcasts while living life. In fact, to do a few odds, it struck me that given all we have learnt about graphing, this is perhaps the worst graphical representation I have yet seen. So essentially this is where the emissions come from. And they have a series of four boxes representing 20, 32, and 48%, so up to 100%. But you can't see intuitively that the emissions together add up to 100%, but it does intellectually. And then out of the boxes they have a square taken away for non-emitting component. So... it's just illogical in the extreme, and the square is shaded and the actual square is pushed off to the side with the percentages written about that percentage. So you're not sure whether what the percentages refer to at all. It's really... so that 27% of the 48% of total emissions is generated by renewable resources. It's just an appalling graph. Now, how else would you do it? You'd do it with, I would expect, a double-centered pie graph. So the total emissions at the top is a circle, it's driven up, so you've got 48 on 360 degrees for heat, and 32 on 360 degrees for... No, is that... let's get this out. 32 on 100 times 360, so 3.6 times 48 degrees for heat, 3.6 times 32 for... for transport, and 3.6 times 20 for degrees for power. And then that's for, say, as a total fraction of production, then in from zero upwards you'd have the fraction of renewables to come inwards as a sort of a pie chart within it, and so you would see that you can actually increase the size of the pie, and then you increase the size of renewable. You want to squeeze that carbon emitting donut annulus as you go around and bring it up. And this is just an appalling graph. Now just see the next graphic they have here, and okay, so they have the observed warming band here. So it's 1.5 degrees, the number of degrees increase, and we have increased to 1 degree Celsius at this point in time. The average is 1 degree Celsius. However, it looks as though in 2017 we have actually tripped over 1.5 degrees the annual increase. So this is a sort of again, a very poor graph. You could have a moving average, if it's the moving average, and the current warming rate, which is a projection. Now, one of the things is that they've done a horrible, horrible thing, is that they have put dotted lines, which means an extrapolation, and they're... if they've got a linear warming rate in here, they should just draw a line with an angle or a rate indicated on that particular line, the current line. So, yeah, so the current warming rate obviously isn't correct, so it's a really misleading. Now, my major point about this is that if you've got the ability to publish a magazine that many people read, and you are and you've got this, you really are now they've got to hear the source, the IPCC. And it could be that the actual diagrams are not built. And so if the sources are here, no, they don't have a source for their percentage. But in terms of the actual graphics, it's appalling. So I doubt that New Scientist, with their ability, would just take graphics off one place. In terms of communication, scientific communication, I think it's really poorly put. And so what goes up is showing that the increasing at 1.5 must come down. And it is interesting that they have something called carbon capture and storage, and that's predicted to come in on board around 2030. Okay, this is the carbon capture is there, carbon dioxide removal. And so these technologies have not yet occurred, and so these basic scenario one is where we don't have these excessive, it's called CCS and CDR, so carbon capture and storage is CCS, carbon dioxide removal, okay. So CDR, obviously you want to do it here. And so these technologies don't yet exist. And so they have, everyone adopts a low energy lifestyle now. No overshoot, no CCS or CDR needed. This is insane. So, your carbon use, if you use some land, there's so many trees which exist on the land, so it's sort of like a one-off increase. You don't get continuous increased carbon capture. So if you grow a big redwood forest, that's so many tons of carbon in that redwood forest, end of story. So as that forest matures, the amount of carbon captured by it is down. So they have four scenarios here. Rapid decarbonation achieve, slight overshoot, some reliance on CCS and CCR. And then scenario three, current trends overshoot of 0.1 degrees, reliant on extensive. So they've got different models. There's none of these technologies which are not proven and just will not happen. Okay, scenario one's the only one. Scenario two, there's a little bit. to compensate for overshoot and economic growth, we introduce these technologies. And what's happening here is, I just don't know, annual emissions, CO2 emissions, so it's would be petatons, I would accept. Okay, so the graphs are confusing. Now, the important point here is that for some reason the graphs don't add up. They have emissions from electricity, other engines, buildings, transport, industry, and buildings in industry is brown. Oh, okay. So what they've done is, for some reason, they have merged two... They've kept transport differently, but they've just merged two colours through for scenario four, which defies logic. And so electricity... So, no, surely electricity is being used for industry? I'm just baffled. Surely electricity is used for buildings and transport and industry. And, I don't understand. And this is carbon production, carbon producing electricity. Okay, now how to play. So that was a theory that you've got to think of it as a video game, and we've started off giving you these appalling graphics, which are really hard to understand. And right, and so we've got net emissions falling zero to all these things at if we do nothing and we keep it and doing, we've got 2060. If we start to have growth, we've got to pull that back net emissions. Just really hard to see what they say. So they've got this idea of a video game, and it's how to play the video game. How to play hitting 1.5 degrees Celsius. Our overall aim is clear, limiting global warmth to the magic number of 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. To get there, however, we need to keep another magic number in mind. How many more tons of carbon dioxide can we afford to dump into the atmosphere before we bankrupt the climate? Depending on what carbon budget we choose, we can increase our chances of winning the game at the expense of making the game play harder. Okay, we might choose 770 gigatons. That's the level of future emissions we think gives us a 50% chance of limiting the warming to 1.5 degrees. To tilt the odds, to tune the two-thirds in our favour, however, we must get lower, down to 570 gigatons. So, okay. More pessimistic assessments of how much warming has already happened put these numbers considerably lower. Okay, so we've got an objective, but we don't quite know what the aim is. To put the figures in perspective, the annual global emissions are currently around 40 gigatons. So we've got 10 years of going. So the game is over in less than 20 years if we don't start to play now. Doing nothing isn't an option, says Forster. One catch is that unknowns such as exactly how sensitive the climate is to carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, especially methane, means our carbon budget could change even as we play. To make things even hairier, about half the budget is already spoken for in the shape of existing or planned electricity generating plants that, unless they are retired early, will carry on burning fossil fuels for many years to come. I think China and India really give a toss about it. You know, the people are going to be hurt the most. They're already poor. So, let's see what they're saying. To give ourselves better than even chance, we must spend our carbon budget wisely throughout the game. We need to spend more in one level, then where we need to spend more on one level, we must cut down another, with the aim of peaking and then tapering down to the promised net of zero emissions by 2050. Which is not achieved in scenario 3 or 1, as it's given up here. The goal is not negotiable, even though it says that it is negotiable. If we keep on emitting, the climate keeps on warming, we lose the game. The IPCC reports any scenario that fails to reduce CO2 emissions to net zero would not limit global warming. So let's play. Well, alright, so if we don't have this carbon dioxide removal, we're going to have to change the land use. But land use is only a temporary thing. It only takes out so many gigatons. So if you've got some carbon, so many gigatons of carbon forestry, it wouldn't be all that bad. Okay, this is obviously meaning that we're not doing geoengineering, so this is a bit confusing. Level 1, kill fossil fuels. That's a bit excessive here. And it's a picture of geothermal power here in Iceland provides low carbon energy. Oh my God, Father. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. As we start playing level 1 of the game, we get the immediate boost. We have already taken the first step. In the past few years, the transition to renewable energy has begun in earnest, driven by rapid progress in ramping up wind, solar, electricity generation. In 2016, a quarter of the world's electricity needs, making up more than 10% of our total energy consumption, was covered by modern renewable sources, meaning anything but traditional burning of biomass, such as wood and dung. So let me read that one again. Okay, so we burn dung and stuff, that's renewable, but 10% of our energy is burned by renewables. Most pathways to limit warming to 1.5 degrees require at least 50% and preferably much more of the world's energy needs to come from renewable sources by 2050. Why not nuclear, my friend? That means the most complete decarbonisation of the electricity, almost complete decarbonisation energy of electricity generation. The winning scenarios rely heavily on wind and solar, but hydro, geothermal energy and biofuels. Carbon, uranium is not in there. Most pathways also require the use of nuclear energy more. In some scenarios, fossil fuels can remain in the mix, but must be defanged by using carbon capture and storage, a technology to neutralize carbon emission that we are busy developing in a level 4. Coal, which produces more carbon per unit energy than any other fossil fuel, must cover almost 13% of our overall energy needs and preferably zero. Okay. Okay. The transition still isn't happening fast enough, but nobody doubts that it is imminently doable, given the right nudges from policymakers and financiers. These include ending both direct and hidden subsidies for fossil fuels and imposing a form of carbon pricing to reflect the environmental damage that fossil fuels cause. Whether we will get those things to help us complete this level is another question entirely. Yeah, it is sort of making me think. In terms of farms, okay, quite honestly, it's unlike transport. Farm transport is you're going back and forth. You're going back and forth in a field, ploughing. It's all very energy intensive. But I do think you could not cable driven, but you could charge up batteries much more in a farm, in my viewpoint. Okay, level 2. So that's... It's got an air of insanity reading this. Level 2, travel light. Already, things are a little hairier in level 2. Decarbonising electricity isn't enough to reach zero. At the same time, we must ensure other kinds of energy-consuming activities, currently powered by dirty fuels, converted to clean electricity, otherwise clean up their act. These pitches are straight into big one. How we move ourselves around. More our products around. I think most of the fuel is taken up in diesel, shipping up Chinese goods to ourselves. Okay, more than 90% of the transport is powered by oil in the form of petrol, diesel, aviation fuel, and just 3% in the... there you go, 90%, I think. Just 3% of transport-related energy comes from renewable. Transport accounts for something like a quarter of the world's energy related to CO2 emissions. Let's flip back. Transport. No, he says 32%, and they've said here something like a quarter of the world's energy related CO2 emissions. So they said 32%. That's like, okay. And its contribution is growing about 2.5% per year. The IPCC says the present major challenges for decarbonisation. So that's a directly contradicting, because they've said 32% this year. Major challenges for decarbonisation, recognising the scale of the challenge, most 1.5 degrees pathways call for only 30% reduction in transport-related emissions by 2030. But even reaching this goal means mastering multiple weapons simultaneously. Oh, God. Besides switching to electric vehicles, powered, of course, by renewables, we need to improve fuel efficiency and switch from oil to biofuels. We have made land available to produce in level 5, including aviation. Together, we can deliver 80% of the required cuts. The rest will have to be done through personal sacrifice, choosing buses and trains over cars and planes, car sharing, and even avoiding travel altogether unless you go on foot or bike. Now, I am a fool. In Europe, when I was there, I'd have my little army hoochie, my compass, my map, and I would walk. Like, I walked to Mont-Saint-Michel, up to Salisbury, to Stonehenge. I just really, really recommend giving yourself a bit of a walking challenge. You get a much better feel for the place by walking around. Okay, rebuilding everything. Hitting 1.5 at level 3. If level 2 sounds like a slog, level 3 is even harder. At least last count, in 2014, homes, offices, shops and other buildings were responsible for 23% of the world's related emissions. Okay, and just going did they say, oh well, whatever, the percentage is so confusing. I wouldn't mind. Okay. So clever Glampel in level 1, resulting in a massive expansion of zero carbon electricity, will give us a head start at this level. Okay. But a third of building-related carbon emissions comes directly from burning fossil fuels, mostly gas for heating and cooking. That's because we're really lagging in tackling level 2. We must give it all out in this level, reducing emissions from 80 to 90% by 2050. Yeah, what I would say is soul cells. And you know what? I would, quite honestly, people are into slow cookers. Why not have, this is just an innovation, my friend, why not having a slow cook solar oven, right? Thermally, yep, generating heat, like hustle hot water, but for your oven. It must be a way of doing it. And it's computer controlled, so if the clouds come over, it's just, oh, bugger, I've got to use my electricity. I just think people, you know, taste the energy in it. Simply waiting for zero carbon electricity to arrive is not an option. And also, the other thing is that when you're slow cooking, it's got to be heat for a certain while, but, you know, the temperature can actually vary. You don't have to get it too good. Simply waiting for zero carbon to arrive is not an option. Our strategy for this level must include switching to energy-efficient lighting to reduce electricity consumption, installing state-of-the-art insulation and double-glazed windows, and putting a new heating and cooking systems that don't burn fossil fuels. I would so enjoy if we bloody well got inductive cooking going. However, Australia did this. We had a massive insulation, and the coal industry hated it. And then when a couple of people carked themselves because it was poorly planned out and regulated, this is little sparkies, that's what we call electricians here in Australia, spruker sparky. A sparky is someone who puts it up, they'd go out and sort of drill through insulation and drill onto some faulty circuitry and fry themselves. And it's the government's fault for poor training. To put that challenge in perspective, the London offices of New Scientist occupy one floor of a six-storey building. Yeah, because you've certainly got not putting yourself into resources for doing graphics. Is gas-powered. The lighting is mostly fluorescent, and the air conditioning is required in summer to maintain a comfortable temperature. You whingy poms. Most of the staff go home to a drafty old house, housing stock with gas-fired boilers and stoves. New poms. Now, the scale of the problem, scale of this problem is up to the whole of London. The whole of the UK and the whole of the world. According to the IPCC report, 5% of the buildings in the rich OECD countries will need to be energy refurbished every year from now on. Okay, so that's 20 years to get it all done. Oh, obviously. Oh, no. Even that does not get you enough through the level, however. New buildings will have to be constructed without emitting any carbon dioxide at all, preferably by 2020, which is tomorrow. And that means shifting away from carbon-intensive concrete and steel towards carbon-neutral wood-based materials, or fundamentally recasting the way we make those materials, which brings us neatly to our next of our parallel levels. I'm mentally insulted. Parallel levels? The levels are not one above the other, they're in parallel, so they're actually not levels at all. The fundamental thing, how you can reduce the carbon dioxide footprint of these massive homes is not have a massive home. Just have a little wood. I think you've known how to build houses before. And in Australia, it is a challenge to build a wood house because wood houses are disappearing because they burn down regularly. And so there's all this technology to make houses which don't burn down, bushfires, just for you. So we don't have, you can't build a house with an air draft grill anymore. It's got to have a thing which stops embers going in the house. You can't have certain types of air conditioning. The skylights, which are, you think, great, I can save electricity by skylight. Hey, what about natural lighting, my friend? But you have this here. The skylights have to be bell rated, so they measure the distance from the foot, the distance that an ember can flow, and then they build your house appropriately. Do it. And it's changed. It'll be interesting if you can do carbon emissions and bushfires. Okay, level 4, which you now know is parallel levels. It's like steps which don't go up. Also, steps like stepping stones on a creek, they don't go up. But we wouldn't call the stepping stones level steps, your upper level. Okay, a new industrial revolution. Oh dear. Now we are deep into the game, and the difficulty ratchets up another notch. Industry is staggeringly hungry for fossil fuels, so that buildings or transport and its emissions are growing. More than buildings and transport. Producing metal, pulp, paper, chemicals, concrete, minerals, uses copious amounts of coal and other fossil fuels to heat and steam. To complete this level, and other emissions will have to be slashed from around 80%. Obviously, if you're going to zero emissions, you've got to start doing. Our first move must be to phase out coal. The next is to vastly increase energy efficiency. I think there's different things. Coal for heat, but coal for chemicals is hard to beat. The energy efficiency and electrify where possible. At this point, however, our game plan is not good enough because we will start butting against the limits of the weapons in our existing arsenal. The IPCC report admits that it will take a massive investment of R&D to roll out new carbon-free industrial processes for making things such as cement, iron and steel. Cement, I think you heat up calcium carbonate, lime and sand. And calcium carbonate goes to carbon dioxide, and you've got silicon dioxide. I forgot what Portland cement is. Steel is a carbon alloy of steel. So you can't, this is just in your face, a carbon-free process for making steel, which is steel is a carbon alloy of iron. I think this is just guff, and that is simply what is called overshoot target of going to 1.5 degrees for a few decades before clawing its way back down. The jam tomorrow technological fixes doesn't end there. fossil fuels we cannot wean ourselves off. The answer is carbon capture and storage. These technologies, as yet unproven on a large scale, aim to capture CO2 emissions and sequester them somewhere, preferably outer space or up to some Americans' home, most probably underground, obviously. No, I'm going to sequester carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. I get all the money. So they never reach the atmosphere. Oh, right. Okay. Well, I suppose you could put them in big... So are we doomed to fail this level? I would say yes. Foster at the University of Leeds says not. Get out. Go on, you Foster. We do have the technologies, but we have to make them cheaper, more affordable, and to make them work on a much bigger scale, i.e. the technologies are too expensive, they can't afford them, and they're not yet full scale. This just not means CCS, which is carbon capture and storage, but greener processes for making aluminium, definitely, steel, cement, and the rest. You know what, I think aluminium is the real bugbear. That uses a bucket of energy, because there is a bucket of energy in aluminium. It's a fantastic, fantastic product. The big question is, that seems right for a good old nuclear reactor. Again, the idea exists to make it through this level. We need to make it them a reality and fast. This person's got a real, got themselves really into writing this article. Okay, oh God. We're on to level 5. Reap what we sow. Level 5 is in some ways the longest and trickiest of them all. It's a journey through forest, farm and food. At present, land use accounts for about a quarter of the carbon emissions. Getting that to zero is a game of complex trade-offs. Land can be used as carbon sink, but we can also need to grow food, which inevitably emits carbon dioxide, which is, oh God. While balancing the competing needs isn't easy, it gives us multiple buttons to press. Quote, there's a whole portfolio of actions, and if you push hard on one, you can push less hard on others, says Drew Schindel of Duke University in North Carolina, another IPCC author. To cut a very long story short, and of course I wouldn't want too much detail from logic in it, the best way forward is to intensify agriculture while reducing our consumption of food whose production results in lots of greenhouse gas emissions. Okay, predominantly those that come from cattle. So, yeah, basically, we just got to put a burger tax on. Goodbye, McDonald's. And that allows us to swap pasture for forest, or finding room to grow biofuels for aviation and other forms of transport. Good point. Pastures, especially with cows on it, is a gigantic source of both CO2 and methane. Forests, on the other hand, can pull CO2 out of the air, so reducing deforestation is a must, but it doesn't do it indefinitely, okay? Because the tree grows, and that's the total amount of carbon that tree's going to pull out. You know, a very mature tree, it's in there for 20 years. It's just, you know, it will produce say if it's an evergreen tree, that's it. Okay. Do all that successfully by mid-century, and we're close to winning the game. Close, but no banana. Look, I think I can write this type of stuff. Suck, not blow. A global net zero emission doesn't mean emitting nothing at all. Some emissions are sources that we do not know how to eliminate, such as nitrous oxide from agricultural fertilizers, and others are too hard to get rid of entirely. Yet the other thing is we put a huge amount of electricity into making the nitrous oxide by the Haber process. To limit global warming to 1.5 degrees, these remaining emissions must be balanced out by removing carbon dioxide from already in the atmosphere. Yes, why not just overline that our magnesium silicon oxygen chemical, the core, we just get that up and grind it up, it's quite good. This is the theme of level 6, carbon dioxide removal, CDR technologies. They are a secret portal that allows successful exit from the game, delivering a net zero as well as potentially clawing back any emissions overshoot. Says the IPCC, all analyzed 1.5 consistent pathways use CDR to some extent. And this is just mind, hurts my mind to see how this is going. because the plant is seedier, the technology might conjure up ideas of some miraculous machine that sucks CO2 out of the air, but such technologies does not exist, and it may never. I think the laws of physics says it's going to be unlikely, but you know, I'll eat my science textbook. So we have to do it using what we already know. Planting a forest is the simplest way to do it. So our success on this level is tied up with our progress in level 5. Another approach is BECCS, or bioenergy with carbon capture and storage. You grow biofuels, burn them, and sequester the CO2 using CCS technologies being simultaneously developed in level 4. Neither is a shoe-in, but the IPCC says CDR deployment at a scale is unproven, and reliance on such technology is a major risk in the race to warming limit. But it's not the biggest. That comes with level 7. Okay, we're getting up to level 7. Remember, they're all parallel levels. Change ourselves. 7-7 is by far the most difficult and torturous stage of our game because it requires game players to confront their own weaknesses, which they've made hard by drawing poor graphs. We have to address demands as forced. This could be a real sticking point. We talk about power generation, transport industry, building and agriculture. We're talking about our own actions. If on any given day you use electrical appliance, spend time inside a building, use hot water, travel anywhere in a vehicle or buy and eat anything, you're contributing to the problem. Besides just breathing, my friend, you are producing, each person is producing carbon dioxide. Change that means making sacrifices, starting the day, driving less, flying less, consuming less meat, having fewer children. See what you can do, Lev. I think that's just bizarre. I think we reached peak child in 2000, and we are having fewer children. Yeah, there are less children on Earth now than there was in 2000. The number of children is going down. Thanks to starting to change, says Forster, although not fast enough. Sales of electric cars are increasing. More people are cutting down on meat. Even the US climate rogue nation is waking up, says Schoenfeld. I feel there is an increasing awareness among the general population. I live in North Carolina, and we've had two huge hurricanes. People are flabbergasted when they see Trump administration respond to refuse to acknowledge the role of climate change at the same time. And that, as the IPCC pointed out, is what is still lacking. Political will. We're talking about our biggest transformation ever, and we're expecting policymakers to drive it, says Michael Grob at the Institute of Sustainable Resources at the College of London. Is that conceivable in a democracy? Question mark. Darren Lucas of the UK Only's Green Party MP, okay, thinks it is. Thank you, you're by yourself. But only through people power, demanding the sort of changes that will see us through level 1 to 6. This is bizarro. It's clear we're going to need a mass movement, she says. As people come to see green alternatives and vote for my party, our quality of life, as well as our state of environment, I believe we can persuade politicians to take action. One way or another, big change is coming. It's up to us to decide in what direction. Quote, we never seen this kind of transformation in terms of a change of global scale, says James Ford, another climate scientist at the IPCC, author of the University of Leeds. Quote, it will be difficult, says Dick Cornick. Okay, who is Dick Cornick? I don't know. There's Karen Lucas. There's James Ford. Where is Dick Cornick? Where does he come from? I've just lost it. This is because it's a random person, and it's quoted him in the middle of things. No, well, he's a random quote up. If you want to say, have you heard what Dick Cornick has said on such and such? He said this, and just make it up and stick it in. Forster goes further than that. Of course it isn't impossible, he says, but we have to try. Even if we go over 1.5, every bit of extra warming we shave off makes the world more livable. And if we overshoot little, we may be able to claw it their way back. We have an opportunity, said Forster, not only to solve climate change, but also to really make the world a far better. Game on. This unfortunately reeks to me of just, I don't know, it's like a kid's essay. what you can do. Keep warming below 1.5 degrees will require behavioural changes. That doesn't mean you have to don a hair shirt. Obviously, if it is a hair shirt, you want to make it a carbon low shirt. So it's possibly best to, if you're taking it off a bear, to leave the bear around, give the bear a bit of a shave with a mechanical shaver to make your hair shirt. The cumulative effect of small, low-effort actions can be great. The more each of us contributes, the less impossible it will be to meet the target. There's a selection of the most doable and effective interventions as selected by the scientists at the IPCC, VegChamp. Switching from plant-based diet can reduce the carbon footprint of your food more than 90%. If anything else, avoid beef. Its carbon footprint is 3 times larger than pork and 6 times higher than chicken. Yeah, I just swapped kangaroos. They are just fantastic. They don't fart methane. They fart carbon dioxide. They're really good. Really good for you. I go for kangaroos. The second worst offenders are tropical fruits imported by air and cheese. What? And cheese. How did cheese get in there? It's estimated that a shift to plant-based diet across the globe would cut the carbon emissions by up to 70% from this source. I just like how this person's just got it for cheese. Of course, anyone who knows me thinks this is mad. Drive off car journeys, especially short ones in cities, account for a disproportionate share of emissions. That doesn't mean you have to stop driving entirely. A 2017 study in the Netherlands found that members of a car sharing scheme drove 15 to 20% fewer kilometres than before they joined. So it's emitted between 13 to 18% carbon dioxide. What the heck? How does 15 to 20% goes to, because they're not driving, it's just sitting there, it's still got carbon footprint, I would expect. Leg power can replace many car journeys too, except in Australia, because you've got huge, unbelievable distance. It takes me an hour to go up to the next village just walking. Yeah, that's 2 hours gone. Yeah, that's a fair distance. Account for 11% of the distance travelled by cars, while trips within cycling distance, 8 kilometres, accounted for 55%. Be warned though, all small gains achieved by not driving can be wiped out by taking a single holiday flight. Return economy, which is what Aussies do, my daughter's going overseas, London to Mallorca and Spain, can you imagine? Going from Sydney to London, there's carbon dioxide fuel, especially people go, I think what we should do is just imprison people. All Australians who go overseas should be slapped in prison for using so much carbon dioxide. About 2 ounce flying tons emits the equivalent of 900 kilograms of CO2, about the same as you'd save in a year by going vegetarian or driving 2,500 kilometers less. However, if I can point out that air travel is extraordinarily efficient because you've got 800 people going up. And look, I think the engines are going to improve. Okay, run a tight ship. According to a US study in 2009, just choosing energy-efficient model when it comes to replacing your home appliance would reduce your carbon emissions by 1.9% on average. If I can also say, just boiling the water that you need is a major thing. Other simple changes, such as lowering the temperature of your hot water and washing machine, using a lower flow shower head, not leaving appliances on and standby, and drying and washing in the outdoors, like we do in Australia, rather than with a tumble dryer, can cut a further 2.5%. Not huge, but everything counts. Smart thermostats would make a big contribution. A modelling study in Germany in 2017 found these can reduce households' emissions by 26%, with a bonus reduction in energy bills. If you are rattling around a big house, consider downsizing. I would definitely say that houses built in Australia are just eye-wateringly big. And so they build it, and they've got a kid who's going to be there for 5 years, and they just do up the room finally, and before they go. Be a desk warrior. Officers are a major source of unnecessary emissions, so turn off lights when everyone has left for the day, switch off the workstation when you go home, and don't leave the phone chargers plugged in when they're not in use. I think now we've got, I've really forgotten what they're called. Switch mode power supplies. I think that's just insane. Better, don't go to the office if you can get away with it. A US review in 2012 found that at-home workers travel up to 77% fewer kilometres in a vehicle by avoiding a commute. Yeah, I just really wish I knew what these emissions are. Okay. Yep. Just... Okay, I'll avoid that, and I think I might go and publish that particular one. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.